fine.
When you're not in front of the Baruch, you don't add merit, you don't say whatever you want. You're standing in front of the Melech Malchei HaMelechim, and you're very, very careful about what you say and how you say it. If you walk into a non-Orthodox shul, they'll look at your tefillah as being very dry and very formulaic. Oh, you just say the same old words. You don't know what you're saying. You're babbling. Come to our synagogue or our temple and you'll see. We invite girls up to say poems, and we invite boys up to play the guitar in front of God. And the reason we're so careful about our tefillahs is because you're standing in front of the Melech Malchei HaMelechim. You're standing in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu. You don't just behave like you behave with your sister or with your brother. There's a rigidity and there's a formality that preserves the gravitas of the moment that you're standing in front of God. In the mornings, there's a minhag to recite one parak of Mishnayos. Someone asked me to record this thing. I said, I'll be recording it. The minhag to recite one parak of Mishnayos. Which parak is that? Anyone know? Which parak do we recite in the morning in the section called Korbanos? What do we call that parak? Ezehu Mekomen. Do you know which parak it comes from in Shas?
Zvachim.
Zvachim. Very, Zvachim. Which parak? Very good. Which parak in Zvachim? It's the fifth parak in Zvachim. There are about 600 parakim in Shas. Why do we choose the fifth parak in Zvachim to recite every morning? Good trivia question. The fifth parak in Zvachim is the only parak in Shas that doesn't have a machlokes. It's amazing. Machlokes in debates are the cornerstone, the foundation of Shas. You have to understand something. At Har Sinai, Hashem didn't give Moshe one truth, and they just forgot what that truth was. A machlokes is not a product of the deterioration of our Masor. At Har Sinai, Hashem told Moshe, you see this? It's Tamei. And there are 49 different flowcharts that can achieve that logical conclusion. But you know what else? It's also Tahor. And there are 49 flowcharts that can achieve that conclusion. Now, how could something be Tahor and Tamei at the same time? The problem with your understanding that is because you and I are Homo sapiens. And Homo sapiens think binary, on, off, black, white, good, bad. But our Kodesh Baruch Hu's mind works differently. So for us right now, it's day outside. Can't be night. And when it's night, it can't be day. But for our Kodesh Baruch Hu, what do we say every day? Yotzer or? So for Hashem, they're both true. So in a way that I can't explain to you, because I'm also a human being, and my mind thinks binary, there's no one truth. We follow a certain halacha because that's the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that we decided to implement in our practice. So we make Kiddush this way, we make Kiddush that way. We keep halacha this way, we keep halacha that way. When we get to Shemayim, there won't be any mitzvahs. There's no mitzvahs in Shemayim. We don't have bodies. We don't wear tefillin. We don't keep Shabbos. There's no time. So then it's all just about exploring all the ideas of Hashem that were said in Har Sinai. Any of you like studying physics? Any of you like studying physics that want to acknowledge it? I'm the physics geek. Please, make fun of it. And you know what I do in my spare time? I read math equations. For fun. Right. Okay. There's always one. Right? It's red. It's more red right now than Manchester United's uniform. So I'm the physics geek. There was a Dutch physicist named Niels Bohr. Wiki him today. Niels Bohr lived in the 18th century. He once said, the opposite of a true statement is a false statement. The opposite of a profound statement is another profound statement. So Hashem doesn't speak in true or false. Hashem speaks in profundities. So there's machlokes in everywhere in Shas. And when there's a machlokes, it doesn't mean that one person's right, one person's wrong. It just means that one person captured part of Hashem's will, the other person captured the other part of Hashem's will, and they're both true. Okay, we have to make a decision how to act halachically. And you know what? 600 years ago, halachic observance varied wildly based on all those options. If you lived in France, you put on tefillin one way. If you lived in Spain, you put it on another way. If you lived in France, you ate matzah one way, you kept chametz one way. The Shulchan Aruch was written in the 16th century to standardize halacha, because Jews were just being dispersed to all corners of the earth and it became unwieldy and too large. But don't think that there's one way to view Hashem's will. So when you come across a machlokes in a Gemara, it's not who's right or who's wrong. It's the different sides of Hashem's will. And each human being can only grasp a partial aspect of that truth. But there's one area that there's no room for creativity. What's that area? When you're standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, in the Beis HaMikdash. There's no machlokes when it comes to Korbanos.
Everything's come to us. You're going to go. You're going to bring a calf. Bring a bull. You bring a shark. Bring a tiger. I got into Instagram lately. I'm very excited about it. So I'm a shark addict. I signed up for shark and orcas and oceanography. And if I wanted to bring a carbon to Hashem, I'd bring a huge humpback whale. Put it on the mizbeach. Slice its belly. Have the blubber flow all over the ground of the Beit HaMikdash. Hashem, I love you. Moby Dick, look how much I love you. I've sailed across the oceans and I've harnessed the energy and here it is. Ask yourself that question. If you wanted to show Hashem how much you care for him, what animal that if you brought would show your commitment and your zeal? Everyone can imagine a snake, a tiger, or a wolf. All of a sudden, very specific animals, very specific routines, makes a difference. This amount of blood, that amount of blood, this part of his back, that part of his back, north, south, east, west, one day, 2 days, 3 days, who cares? Stand in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu and talk to him. Remember whatever you want, to be spontaneous and be creative and be artistic. And the answer is, and I want to say this as powerfully as I can to you, Hashem is not your sister. And Hashem is not your brother. Hashem is the Melech Malchim Malchim Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we are Basar V'dam. And when we encounter Hashem, we ad-lib. We sit there and we're very, very protocol. We follow the rules. If you're meeting the king and the queen, when do you bow and when do you... Who made that mistake? Who was... What?
Trump.
Well, Trump made a lot of mistakes. Who made one mistake? What's your name?
Robert.
Very good. Nadav and Aviv. Because they thought it's a special day. Standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mishkan is built, let's cook up our own carpet, Eishzar. And you can't. When you're standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're very, very careful, which is why Korbanos are so regimented and so strict. And there's no machloksim, there's no room for error. It's called gravitas. And structure preserves gravitas. You shouldn't feel gravitas with your friend. Maybe ask yourself that question. Do you ever feel gravitas? It's part of the issues we're facing in today's world. Listen carefully. I'll tell you a new word. It's called a world without awe. An unawed world. When's the last time you felt awe? A-W-E. Because we've dissected everything into oblivion. Because we know how everything works. Because we're very distrustful because the world is occupied by Trumps. So we know that everyone's just a faker megalomaniac. And we don't allow ourselves to believe in something larger than ourselves, or larger than the small gilded cage that we live in, and that we're trapped by. There's an incredible, incredible moment. I'm sure you've all heard, or some of you have heard of Racheli Frankel. Mm-hmm. She's an incredible woman. My son is very, very close with the family, because my son was very close with Naftali Frankel. And to the credit of the family, they still keep in touch, and my son goes, they push up ourselves. It's like becoming a second home. They could have withdrawn entirely, but they wanted to remain close with Naftali's friends. So she was the one talking to a bunch of children at the Kotel. And she said, I have something to tell you, because you can't imagine the tefillos. The tefillos were overwhelming. I was at the Kotel, 50,000 people davening for the three boys. I'm telling you, the 50,000 people crying their heart out as if they just lost their mother or their father. I mean, you could feel the tears. You just would walk over to people and just see their faces gushing and gushing with tears, davening and davening and davening and davening and davening. And she told these kids, Hashem is not our employee. We can ask, but we can't dictate. And he might say no. And you know what? I was just speaking to one of the Rabbanim in one of the schools I was teaching, in the Broughton Hill, Broughton Jewish. I said, you know what? I'm not sure that Hashem said no. Hashem may have said yes. But we don't always understand Hashem's no. I don't know that I know Hashem's ways. But do you know what happened in the summer of 2014 after those three boys were kidnapped? We discovered a network of terror tunnels that it had not been discovered. Do you know the magnitude of what we're talking about? I'm not talking about one tunnel here or there. There are 30, 40 tunnels. Just let your mind play out the nightmare scenario. 40 undetected tunnels. You send 100 Hamas terrorists without anyone being prepared. The numbers are simply monstrous. You could have been looking at hundreds of casualties, or worse, hundreds of hostages. you know what we went through with Gilad Shalit? It was a little bit before your time. You can read it. It was just convulsive. It was nauseous. It was nauseating because there's no choice. I mean, on the one hand, you couldn't just trade him because then you're encouraging ransom taking and hostage. And then you had to because we're. I'm shaking. I'm not a person that shakes, but I'm shaking my knees right now, thinking about the prospects of hundreds, chas v'shalom, hundreds of Israeli hostages with the movie, with the picture. It would have been Armageddon. So I don't know if Hashem said no or yes. We don't know Hashem's voice. So when you stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't think, you don't ad lib. Boys, that's your answer as to why Orthodox Navi is so regimented, because it comes from Korbanos. If you're standing in front of Hashem, you don't say what's on your mind. You use the words that Moshe Rabbeinu used, that David HaMelech used, the Vishirei David HaTecha Na'anan Hashem Hokeinu, using the Sukkim that David already wrote. You want to stream your own feeling into you. You want it to be authentic. The words are the same. The emotions are different. They're all different. And you know what? You're different now than you'll be tonight at Mincha, than you'll be tomorrow at Maariv. Every moment is different. No two tefillah should be the same. And I'm especially, I don't mean to say this in a gender or discriminatory way, but let's face it, girls are generally ahead of the curve emotionally than boys, just the way you develop. And you should really be thinking about that, and boys, well, how, what emotions you're feeling, and how to stream them into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how to talk to their emotion, and what's on your heart. And it's a real opportunity. So when tefillahs are regimented, it's because they come from korbanos. And korbanos are regimented, and it's not random or arbitrary that korbanos happen to be regimented. It's because you're standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're sitting there with attention. And here's, we're not meant to talk about tefillah today, but since we're talking about it, if you want good advice for successful tefillah, I'll be honest with you. Get the word kavana out of your head. I'm 52 years old, I hardly have any kavana. But I really do respect the process. I know that I'm standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I come on time as best I can. I don't wear a hat or a jacket when I'm not rabbiing in Chutz La'aretz. But I tuck myself in to prepare myself. That's my way of preparing my clothing for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I move my hair over, whatever's left of it. Move it over. I clean out my area. You come to me, I guess, manage to see books, learn papers, pens, computers, get everything nicely organized. I stand at attention. I don't talk. I see my kids leaning over and shul davening as they stand up. I have a Kodesh Baruch Hu, just to know that I stand in front of Hashem three times a day. Whether I have kavanah or don't have kavanah, I'll get to that sometime when I have more of a head. But I know that I'm standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and I respect the process. And certainly, the biggest enemy for davening is this. If you can avoid this, on two fronts. I'm really good at one, sometimes I'm good at the other. I'm really good at not using this during davening, okay? Or using this, because now I got this guy, so I've got to turn this guy off. But I'm really good at that. I'm not so good at not using this before davening. It was good for a while, but then you realize if you use it before davening, it's just throwing ideas into your head that are going to be davening blockers, like beta blockers, because you're trying to think about Hashem, and you've got all your Facebook posts and your WhatsApps and your issues, and I got a lot of things on my mind every day. I got to be a little bit better at that, just to hold this off before davening. It's really cool. I spoke, I forget where, somewhere in London a couple of weeks ago. And someone told me, they're very mocked not to use their phone after saying Krishma Amit. But that was very exceptional. Because, you know, after Krishma Amit, you still can't fall asleep, and you want to fall asleep. So, first of all, it's not a good idea to use your phones when you're trying to fall asleep, because you won't fall asleep. It's been proven scientifically, you really can't fall asleep because your mind's racing. It's also a good time just to think about life. To think. The world is so rapid. When is the last time you sat for 15 minutes alone and thought about one idea for 15 minutes? You don't have to answer the question. But it may not have been for a while. Because the world just moves so quickly. And you're forced to make rapid decisions. That's why we fall into stereotypical thinking. Because we're forced to judge. Really rapid. Oh, he's wearing a hat. It must be this person. She's wearing short sleeves. She must be that person. He's wearing a t-shirt, a polo shirt, green hat, blue hat, something like Dr. Seuss. Everything's Dr. Seuss. We make quick renditions because we're under the gun. Because if you want today, I give you a heter to listen to music for educational purposes. Sit down, go to YouTube, a YouTube popular video from 2018. Just this is for educational purposes. And then, everyone's listening now. Like, how can someone use your computer? Now everyone's away. Before,
Like, you know, there's an old expression in education. Some people go into education one day. Children are like dogs. They can smell authenticity. So, you know, children can smell when there's a heather. There's a heather smell. Oh, I smell a heather. Time to wake up. A video from 2018 and a video from 1988. That's a random music video. And try to ask yourself what's happening to your brain after this. Your brain is moving much faster in 2018 because your FPSs, which is just a fancy way to say frames per second, is so much greater than it was in 1988. How many frames is your head forced to process in a second? The video is just moving so fast because we're living in a really quick world, quick communication. If you don't answer a WhatsApp, within 5 minutes the guy's insulted, or an email within, you know, what's the time span of expected response for WhatsApps, the time span of expected response for Facebook posts, is a time frame. The last 2 weeks I was basically with my father in the hospital, helping him recover. So I basically let my emails and my WhatsApps lag. And it just feels so terrible. Like 3 days passed and I didn't get back to something with a WhatsApp or an email. Like, I'm going to be in prison. And the, you know, the technological, you know, we send people to the technological traders. You know, we send them off to prison for 10 years to learn how to WhatsApp expeditiously. You know, every day you have to come and train and make sure as you get back as quickly as possible. And what were we talking about? We're talking about Tefillah, right? Anyway, going back way, 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 way back, that's why we don't change our tefillah. That's why we're very careful to maintain the integrity of our tefillah, even though we don't understand the language, because the prospect of everyone writing their own tefillah would be essentially compromising the transcendence of the moment. It's a really good point. The prospect of altering tefillah compromises the transcendence of the moment. The integrity of tefillah preserves the gravitas. It preserves the sense that you're standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch. Okay? On the other hand, tefillah has to be honest. I started saying before that the Gemara says that when some of our Nevi'im saw what was happening in the Beis HaMikdash, they actually did change tefillah. The Gemara says when Yirmiyah saw what was happening in the Beis HaMikdash, he said, you shouldn't say the word Gibor anymore. Kel HaGadol HaGibor B'Hanara. Because it's inauthentic, it's false. It's a forgery to say Gibor when our enemies are trampling through the Beis HaMikdash. Gadol, when the Jewish people are suffering, how can we say Hashem is Gadol to protect us? So they changed tefillah, they couldn't. Because if you forge tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he won't accept it. If you try to daven based on someone you're not, Hashem won't accept it. You have to be yourself. Anyone into Chassidus here? Anyone like studying Chassidus? There's an old Hasidic Shavar by Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Vitebsk. He led a pilgrimage of Hasidic there to Israel, who said that if you have machshavas zaros, bad thoughts, it's a siman from Shemayim that you're trying to daven out of your league. And they're throwing you out. Try to be such a tzaddik, I'm such a big righteous person, just be yourself. Come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your pockmarks and all of your flaws and share it with the Baruch Shalom. And that's why some people, not many, but some people have suggested changing fish above tefillahs. Because we say the section called Nachem, which is what we add for fish above, and it describes the city of Yerushalayim being destroyed and empty and desolate and ugly and disgusting. That sounds like Mark Twain. Mark Twain visited Palestine in 1867, very famous visit, and he describes his walking through the land, and he's basically walking through hell. The land is dry, there's no growth, there's no vegetation, there's no people living there. He says it's been a land that's been cursed by God. And it was, until the Jews returned. If you want to ask me, what are the four signs that we're living through redemption? How do we know? How do we know that this is Hashem, this is not just some facade? There they are. Number one, the ingathering. Unprecedented. Millions of Jews all over the world returning to Eretz Yisrael. According to Rabbi Pallas, not enough. It's all right. We're doing pretty good. It's hard to move. He didn't. I did. That's the difference. He can't imagine life outside of Israel. I can't. And I know how hard it is. I understand why people don't. I want to empower you to think about it, but I don't want to defend you for not being able to achieve it. But if you can't in life, there are other things to achieve. And other ways to live Israel. The thing about it is trying to come, but it's not an all-or-nothing proposition. If you make it, you're a success. If you don't, you're a bust. That's too simplistic for the world we live in. We live in a tougher world. But the ingathering, the It's amazing. Anyone know how many Jews there were when the state of Israel was formed? It's an easy answer. I'll never forget this one. How many Jews approximately lived in Israel in 1948? That's a good guess, because it's a number that you'd remember. I'll say it and I'll smile. 600,000 Jews. Why is that an iconic number?
You
know, the Jews left Egypt. That were counted. In those days, they counted males in 20 to 60. 600,000 is everyone. Incredible. Now, how many Jews there are? 671. How do you grow a population tenfold in 70 years? That's apocalyptic. You expect the country to tank. People are starving in Egypt because of population control. People are starving in Japan because there's too much of a population swell. Thomas Malthus was wrong. Anyone? I gotta teach you guys everything. Come on, someone tell me. Did you earn the education your parents invested in the alphabet? Thomas Malthus? Anyone? Okay. A lot of variants. Come on, girls. Nothing?
He's a geography guy.
What?
Wasn't he involved in geography?
Geography guy? that was his Instagram, a geography guy. A little bit. There's a lot of interesting thinking taking place in the wake of Darwinism, in the wake of understanding humanity and survival of the fittest and Mendelian genetics. And Malthus did the math and described the overpopulation of the Earth, that the Earth would be heading for Armageddon if it followed its natural population cycles. This became the famous Malthusian prophecy of doom, and of course we don't believe in that because we believe that Hashem creates sustainable systems. Aftikom tevel. Anyone finish the pasuk? Aftikom tevel. Hashem created this world. Hashem destroyed it once, and he set in motion a system of rules that would assure that it would never be destroyed again. The end of Noah. Ot charish v'katzir. Seasons will continue. The sun will continue. So we have to deal with global warming, but we have to fear that the world is about to collapse. It's important for us to deal with it, because we're caretakers of Hashem's world. If you throw trash or litter on the ground, you are betraying your responsibility. You're supposed to protect this world. You're supposed to deal with it responsibly. Not because we believe in Mother Nature and some spirit that we love and simply it's Hashem's world. Hashem's masterpiece. So getting back to what we were talking about before what we were talking about. Second proof that this is divine, the blooming of the land. For 1900 years, the land did not allow anyone to till its fertility. It was a desert land, it was a wasteland, nor settle it. Do you know how many people tried to settle Israel? The Turks, the Romans, the Arabs, the Muslims, the Persians, the Brits, Everyone tried. No one succeeded. The land simply remained locked, arms closed. We will not let anyone build a lasting empire. We're going to build a few tents, a few fortresses, a few monasteries so that the Jews can visit it when they run out of nachals to visit, when they visit Israel. So you have to go to Nimrod's fort, remember the bad part of the field. Let's go see the fortress today. Oh, come on. Can't we just go to another nachal? No, this is a really important Roman fortress. Really? Okay. Thank you. Another Roman fortress with small windows for arrows. We get the concept. We get the fact that the windows and arrows, they shoot the arrows. We understand that, right? You have to tell it to us again. Girls and boys, you'll see this when you get to Israel. Right? Another fortress, another Roman story, and another monastery. How many monks were there? It's like the whole world were monks. Because the whole land is full of monasteries. Okay, a few monasteries, a few fortresses. But now all of a sudden, look at the country we're going. I was just talking for Bekelis today. And he said, you know how hard it is to make Aliyah? And one of the most difficult parts is the real estate gap. I think prices in Manchester are more or less healthy, real estate. But they're probably a quarter or a fifth of equivalent real estate prices in Israel. I have no embarrassment saying that I'm a millionaire. I also have no embarrassment saying I'll probably never see a dime. I own a house. It's probably worth millions because it's in a loan short in the bush, right in the heart of where everyone wants to live. But I don't have another place to live unless I came to Manchester. So I'll probably never sell my house. My kids will be wealthy. When you see, the next generation is Google, and there's Apple, and there's Tarragon. You'll know where the money came from. You'll see Tim Cook, and you'll see Sergey Brin, and you'll see my son, David Tarragon, standing side by side in Silicon Valley. You know, it's me, guys, okay? Don't blow the top off, but just realize I was the one who made the moves. I'll never get to enjoy it, but I did it. And we all did it. I'm very wealthy. Who wouldn't know it? The phenomenal success of our country. I saw a graph a couple weeks ago that compared Israel in 1987 to Israel in 2018 across 10 or 12 metrics. GDP, inflation, all sorts of economics, sociological metrics, education, master's degrees, all sorts of quality of life indices. Girls, boys, the statistics were the types of numbers I had never seen. The GDP rose by 4,500%. I had never seen percent. Inflation declined by 7,800%. When I was your age, when I was in yeshiva, do you know how much a bag of milk cost? 80,000 shekels on Tuesday. On Wednesday, it cost 120,000 shekels. See, some of the boys who were in yeshiva know, and the girls among them also, how hard the Rebbeim tried to get you guys to come to the yeshiva minyan, and how much they fail to do it with the lay minyan. In our day, it was very easy to get to the yeshiva minyan because we got there early, and we ran to the makola, and we basically emptied our pockets and said, take our money, and we just took whatever we could off the shelf. Because the shekel had devalued overnight. So our shekels were worth a quarter or a half of what they were worth yesterday, but the prices still reflected yesterday's. So we were basically buying things at yesterday's prices, pulling them off the shelves. That's where we spent our time in yeshiva trying to make money off of the backs of poor Israeli inflation victims. They were sitting there suffering, and we're pulling off cereals, buying them at yesterday's cost. But we made a lot of money. But seriously, you think about the change in the quality of life in Israel? You guys don't even appreciate it. I don't want to sound like some old guy. I lived in the phase of Jewish history when Israel was a third world country. You don't know what I'm talking about. You come to Israel, it's Manchester in his back pocket. Seriously, in terms of quality of life, transportation, economy, all of it. And the fourth part? Kolatar. The amount of Torah being studied today, and as women, we should appreciate it even more. I have to tell you, I don't want to in any way identify anyone, certainly not in this room, but even I was on the plane, and I teach Torah to women as well. I think it's really important that we study Torah seriously. We take yourself seriously. When you take yourself seriously in life, professionally and academically, you have to take yourself seriously in Torah, or else it'll be a bifurcation. And when you work or serious, and so when it comes to Torah, you're always hanging on. Seriously, I'm not saying what Torah you have to study, but you're looking at this, but take yourself seriously. You know what Hashem is, or what is Hashem? What is Hashem? You think carefully about the mitzvahs you perform, where you behave, your midos, your chesed, and your father's mother wants to study Torah. The guys on this side, you have to study Torah. You can't say you're not, you're taught that you're chayav to study Torah. You're not chayav, but it just gives you a good idea of the state of history. I was on the plane last night. And there was a bunch of high school girls from Manchester who were returning from their group trip. And they weren't exactly well behaved. They were your age. Some of these girls, your 12th, your final year? Yeah. And I can tell there's a maturity that you guys have. There's a calm, there's an intellectual, there's a poise. These girls weren't really poised. They ran up around the aisle, screaming, talking. It was just this very, very nishpat time. They didn't want to say anything. They were having a good time, but it really wasn't fair to the other travelers and the other passengers in the flight. It was really not a good thing. And there's none of them were thinking about picking up a book or say for reading it. And just, I believe it was a school that rolled more to the right than your school. And it just reinforced to me how important it is to fill your heads with important ideas and substance in your hearts and your heads. I mean, I'm struggling now with my 12-year-old to get him off the video games and off the computer, and get him to read and get him to learn again. They say fill your head with important ideas. Fill your head. Fill it with meaning. Fill it with ideas. I don't want to be a homie here, but there was an American president named Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was our Churchill. That's the best way to say it. Not ours, theirs. Paul's going to kick me out. Theirs. His wife, who basically ran the country for him. This means probably thinking about the difference between the days of social media and today. Franklin Delano Roosevelt couldn't walk because he was a polio victim. He was in a wheelchair, but no one knew it. Because the press respected his privacy and only took pictures from the waist up. And no one knew that he was a wheelchair victim, or else his machoism would have been compromised.
And Hitler made that and defeated the people who've been rallying around this great hero.
His wife, Eleanor Roosevelt, once said, "Small minds speak about people. Average minds speak about events. Large minds speak about ideas." It's a good index to try to remind yourself what your discourse is. If you find yourself speaking too often about people, then it's not just the issue of Lashon Hara, it's also small-mindedness. Well, it's not just saying salacious things that are hurtful and poisonous, it's you're flooding your head with silliness, talking about people too much. Sometimes when I watch trivia games on TV, and you have this person who wins all the games, oh wow, they're so brilliant, they're so fantastic. And it's killing me inside, because here you have a waste of mental resources on worthless trivia. Dates, names, events. Even if the events are important, because the events are so silly events like culture and fortune. You may not have heard of Thomas Malthus. You may not have heard of Niels Bohr. But you may have heard of T.S. Eliot. A little bit. English poet. 1920s. Bloomsbury Group. Okay. Plenty of your strengths, okay? I know you may not have heard of American population scientists or Dutch physicists, but maybe English folks. T.S. Eliot. What? Actually, he's a great poet. He belonged to a terrible, terrible group called the Bloomsbury Group. These were people that tried to capture the spirit of art in the changing world, and it was very vain and very self-aggrandizing and very sexually ugly. And they formed this little group that lived in the Bloomsbury Circle in England. Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, Virginia Woolf. So we did not. Why did you read by Virginia Woolf?
I didn't know.
If any of you want to read a great book that captures this style called stream of consciousness, where you're not describing events, you're just streaming your ideas through your head. So Virginia Woolf is fantastic. She's a fantastic writer. If you want to read a fantastic writer, she's probably, in my opinion, the best writer from that entire group. Anyway, T.S. Eliot once said, this was in the 1920s, he asked, in a very, very poetic way, where is the knowledge we've lost in information? Namely, there's too much information, and we don't have the ability to acquire knowledge. And then he wrote, where is the wisdom we've lost in knowledge? Imagine building intellect into three different levels. Information, knowledge, and wisdom. Too much information, it's hard to have knowledge. Too much knowledge, it's hard to have wisdom. Wisdom's the highest level. I don't have very strong eyes. So I don't spend a lot of time reading. I spend a lot of time thinking. Hashem didn't give me good eyes. So I can't sit here and read 12 hours at a time. I read a sentence and I think about it for half an hour. I try to turn in those axes and understand it deeper and get wisdom, even though I don't have that much knowledge. I really don't have a lot of knowledge. I hope I have a lot of wisdom. I take ideas and I think about it carefully, profoundly, deeply. By the way, Rabab Chirebi did something very similar. In Sefer HaTanya, he divided knowledge into three different levels. Not the same three levels. Anyone read Sefer HaTanya? First couple of prakim, anyone know what they are? Where's Chabad stand for? Chachma Bina Vadas. Different types of knowledge. Anyway, so we didn't start the shiur yet, because I want to talk about Tisha B'Av. This is all an introduction. And I'll try to warn in an honest fashion. And then we got sidetracked to Tefillah, and then we got sidetracked to all sorts of other things. I know you guys are on your day off, so I'll just end with a little bit of a Tisha B'Av. I've got to control myself. Gotta control myself. So it's really important to mourn, honestly. Because Hashem doesn't like fortune. And certainly mourning is an intensely emotional experience. You're going to make believe you're crying for a reality that no longer exists. Because we're back in Yerushalayim, it's a forgery. And it's disrespectful to Hashem, and it won't touch the deeper levels of who you are. And that's why certain people say we should change the tefillah, but we don't change tefillah, that's how we get sidetracked. We don't change tefillah, we never change tefillah. That's our thing. We stream with new ideas, but we don't change tefillah because that word, what's the line? Compromise the transcendence of the moment. So, okay. No. They're really cool pens. I'm like,
the integrity of
right, okay. So we don't change tefillah. Thank you. But we do change our emotions. So here's the question. Be honest with me. How prepared are you to cry?
Not very.
Not really, right? You live in a pretty good world. And it's good for two reasons. It's good because it's modern, and it's very enjoyable. And you live in a facade, which everything seems and feels perfect. Well, not perfect, but well developed and enhancing. So like you feel like you're living in some dark Eastern European shtetl, walking through horse, I can't say it, I'm a rabbi, but horse excrement. I know these words that teach you in rabbi school, you can't say anymore, it's really tough. But I'm not a real rabbi. In another life, I probably would have been a guest attending, but somehow I went through the wrong door. In college, said, show me where you can train to be a guest attendant at the gas station. And they said, there! I went in the room, and all of a sudden, they got me, put on the hat, gave me a gemara. I'm trying to get out of it, but somehow I keep getting pulled into this rabbi thing. I really should have been pumping gas. That's really where you meet the real people. You know, I'm naked and without any adornments. Tell me what's going on. What do you like? Unleaded? Unleaded. That's really weird. I just false people. So how rabbi can give a share? Anyway, we were talking about fish, right? Not gas stations, not petrol stations. We're talking about fish about. What if you don't feel like crying? What if you don't want to be something fish? Honestly. You don't want to live in Israel at this point in your life, honestly. You don't want to live in a monarchy because you like democracy. I don't, but I understand what you mean, because I understand all the bastard children that democracy has born into this world. We've married democracy, and all of a sudden we have all these bastard children. One of them is called moral relativism. There's no absolute moral. There's no fixed value. Every moral opinion has to be considered. That's a bastard child of democracy, because if everyone has an equal vote, there's a presumption that everyone has an equal moral opinion. And that if you're equal in the ballot box, you're equal in the moral conversation, and it just isn't true. There's some absolutely wrong positions that have to be called evil or wrong or morally corrupt. And many, 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 many other dangers of democracy. Many. Capitalism is one danger. Capitalism is a stepsister of democracy. Capitalism has a lot of benefits to it, but a lot of great dangers. Are you laughing?
No.
You're a capitalist? Okay, so let me ask you, capitalism is drawn on supply and demand, right? The market economy.
Yeah.
Right? Now, for the market economy, it's driven by the consumer interest.
Yeah.
Consumer index, consumer confidence, consumer interest, for Hashem, has unleashed incredible benefits for humanity. We're no longer living in hovels because we've unleashed the human desire for competition and enrichment that has fueled basic Adam Smith. You need an Adam Smith, right? Guy, you got to hire a team of lawyers and sue you out for to give you back the money. Got to start a class action suit against the church of Yavne. How much money did your parents spend on this education? Thousands and thousands of pounds. Here's your chance to take it to court. Sue them through the nose. Get back at those teachers. Anyway, but we define ourselves as consumers. And that's dangerous. Are you a consumer? Come, someone give me a better word to define yourself. Are you a consumer or are you a
giver?
Right. Producer. We consume so that we can produce. I don't know if it was true in London or in Manchester. The last week in America was the Yom Kippur for consumerism. Actually, it was the Purim for consumerism. What's the Rosh Hashanah for consumerism in America? It's called Black Friday. Right after Thanksgiving, people go crazy. You get the new gadgets, because that's the next one. This week, anyone know? Amazon? Prime Day. Prime Day, we can shop for free. Oh, sure. How can you define a day based on free shopping? That's ridiculous. That's asinine. The only thing sillier that happened this week, aside from Prime Day, was Emoji Day. I think it was Chal B'Acha, like Rosh Hashanah Shachal B'Shamas. Prime Day, I think the same day, right?
International Hot Dog Day.
That's pretty silly. That's silly. That's not dangerous.
Yeah.
That's just vicious. That's not vicious. Because emoji basically has stunted our conversation. The real way to tell someone you're happy is to say, I'm happy. Or I'm sad. Or I like you. Excuse me for saying this. I like you a lot. We've had many times together. I'm not going to give you three kisses on your cheek right now. But I may say three kisses emoji. I'll be very serious with you. Some of you may have friends or brothers and sisters or who are autistic. Anyone work with autistic children? So autistic children have a very hard time. By the way, in general, that's not a good thing. Try to build chesed into your life as best as you can. And chesed doesn't mean taking your friend to next for shopping. That's also. Chesed is hard chesed with people who really have special needs, elderly people, ill people. It really, really helps you become a better person and helps you take life less for granted. The difference between you being in this room today or being down the hall in a special needs school is about 10 seconds of oxygen that your parents had when they gave birth to you as opposed to not having. So it's a 10-second difference. Normally we talk about 4 minutes without oxygen, you become a vegetable. At birth, it's a 10-second difference because your mother had to feed you greater and a very dramatic experience. It helps you put things into perspective. It's not all fun. It should be enjoyable life. It's not all fun and games. And life is real. Life is serious. Anyway, with autistic kids who have a hard time communicating, we show them emojis. We teach them the basics of human emotions. And that's really, really basic level. Basically, you're telling yourself, I'm going to be autistic my whole life and just communicate through. That's not really who you are. I'll be honest with you. And I'm looking around today. It's not your fault. When I talk to kids your age, and Baruch Hashem, you're listening very avidly now. I think a lot of people in your generation have a hard time keeping eye contact because you spend a lot of time looking at screens. And screens are then eye contact. You're looking, you're looking back at you. And you're uncomfortable when people look you in the eyes. And that's how you really understand people. You see into their eyes. Shakespeare, the eyes are the windows to the soul. That's Shakespeare. What is that? I got to see my teachers. Windows to the soul. Don't be afraid to look. If someone looks at you with his eyes creepily, someone got that like creepy, creeped out look with the little eyes. But seriously, people talk to you. You want to look at them, understand what they're communicating. Those of you who want to be successful in life, in the world larger, unless it's behind a computer or a technical engineer, a lot of this communication, and a lot of communication, has nothing to do with your tongue. Hand communication, there's body communication, there's body communication. When appropriate, there's also physical communication. Obviously, with the appropriate person, the appropriate setting, you can communicate a lot. It's all about how you communicate your ideas to others. So let's get back to Tisha B'Av, because I have to let you. So you live in a world in which you're not really crying about it. And you've got 36 hours to come up with a solution. Or just go to sleep for 24 hours, which basically most of us. Many people do emotion. You're kind of sure you're a good kid, you're a good boy, a girl, you're kind of off in the chaos, but essentially you'll be in survival mode. I mean, how much time is left? When can this be over? Inhale, hold your breath. In Manchester, you have to hold your breath a little longer to like 12:30 in the morning or something, I'm told. Okay, let her out, get back to reality. How can you make this year real? And I think you guys and girls really want to be real. So that will take another couple hours, and I'm not going to keep you. But here's the solution, okay? If I put a pill, I'm not saying this in any way it's meant to be inappropriate, but I really do cry a lot of this. And I feel the loss of my world, and I feel what Jesus has been through. I feel it very, very deeply. I live in Israel, and I feel modern suffering very, very deeply. I don't know if I'll be able to cry this year, because I'm like on stage, and I have to talk, and I have to present, but when I'm by myself, I really bawl. Why am I telling that to you? If I took a pill out of my pocket and I put it on the table and I said, if you take that pill, I promise you, you feel that this world is falling. And you would You'd get a perspective. It won't take you out of this world, but you'd be able to see it with a perspective and realize how full it is. Did you take that pill? I hope that a lot of you in your hearts are saying, yeah, I'd like to have that perspective. Not necessarily to walk out of my world, but to see it as a fallen world, and therefore still try to improve it. I'm part of this world just as you are. I want to advance it just as you do. I don't fling to some monastery. I'm part of this world. But I realize we're living a fallen reality on many, 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 many fronts, and I cry for the fall of man on many, 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 many fronts. I don't just cry for Jews, I cry for man. I cry for our fallen state. If so, then you're ready for Tisha B'Av. And here's your answer. There's no pill. And think about this line carefully as you're navigating Tisha B'Av. If you can't cry for the mikvah, then cry for yourself, for your inability to cry for the weakness. If you can't cry for your shalayim, cry for the fact that you are so far, you can't even cry for it. And let that be your peace. So what's your name?
Me. I'm
Dania. Here's a good quote. The furthest fall, a lot of F's in here, is to fall so far you forget your fall. Not the farthest, the furthest.
We have 15 minutes.
The furthest fall is to fall so far you forget your fall. That's where many of us are right now. We don't feel fallen, even though we live in a fallen world. The furthest fall is to fall so far you forget your fall. So don't cry for the mikdash, cry for the fact that you can't cry for the mikdash. So Hashem, here I am. I am so far from your shalayim. I am so far that I can't even generate the emotions to realize how far I am. I wish I could. If there were a pill, I would take it. But there is no pill. I just give you myself. If you want to say, I fancy a war, don't cry for the korban based on mikdash, but cry for the korban in Yerushalayim. No, I mean, Yerushalayim, you're a terrible person. But if you're a terrible person, it won't be so hard. You know you have a lot to cry for. You're great people. But we fall into the part that we can be great and not even realize how fallen we are, how much we're missing. And that's sad. And it's sad for you and it's sad for me. I don't think there's any difference. I have to generate that sense. I have my own way of triggering those feelings. But at least make it authentic. And at least make it real and at least be engaged. So I wish I could come to you and fish about and really tell you I want the Beis HaMikdash and I want to live in Israel. So I could find all these triggers and put some Visine in my eyes and make myself cry. If you want, Tisha B'Av, Wiki, Spanish Inquisition. It's not just about the Beis HaMikdash, it's about everything we've suffered since then. Wiki the word program and follow the trail of the internet takes you. Wiki the word blood libel and follow that trail. There's a certain point in Tisha B'Av where I just can't read anymore. I just can't. I like reading and sleeping, obviously, is a great tired, but at a certain point I go online and I just do Holocaust. Listen to remembrances. Wiki, fallen Israeli soldiers, terror victims, read about the free boys, read about the trials of Judaism in Paris and Spain. Write Jews in Arabic countries suffering. And then you'll get hundreds of thousands of responses on what Jews went through. Just walk back through Jewish history and realize how much of a toll we pay to get back to Israel. And then think about how often we're not sensitive to that because we just get lost in the little point that we occupy. You guys all live on a little, little point. It's called Manchester in the year 2018. As we used to say in Brooklyn in the 1970s, free your mind. Free your mind. Walk out. Don't get caught in Manchester United. Don't get caught in the culture. Don't get caught in what's the local bakery name?
Steak Fair.
Just put yourself into Spain. Put yourself into Tunisia. Put yourself into Yemen. Put yourself into Rome. Put yourself into the Colosseum. Because that's where your grandparents probably were. In the immediate aftermath of Rome. With hundreds of thousands of Jews, the Colosseum is not a sporting match. Colosseum is living in dungeons for years and years until, you know, so there's a story into the Colosseum and behind you a tiger pops up and wants you to go. Probably on Tisha B'Av, because that was the big service. Every Tisha B'Av was Jew Day. They were called that. And they invited 50,000 rowdy Romans basically watched Jews being executed in Jewish fashion. And then once every 70 years, that was the biggie. Because you know what they took out once every 70 years? They took out the skin of Rabbi Yishmael of Kohen Gadol, who had been martyred, one of the 10 martyrs. He was very fair-skinned. And the daughter of the Caesar was very attracted to him. And she asked her father, please spare his life. And the Caesar said, no, but because you like his skin, I'll shave off his skin. So I don't think any of the others were killed in as ruthless a fashion. It was pretty ruthless. They hammered Rabbi Akiva's bones one by one. Imagine having your bones broken one by one with a hammer. And they tied Rabbi Yehuda ben Gamla, right, with his hair to a horse. That was pretty standard in Rome. And they burned Rabbi Hanani ben Trajan with a Sefer Torah. I always think about Rabbi Ishmael. Rather than having your skin shaved off. I do a lot of cooking at home. I'm sure you've had this feeling, right? When you're slicing a potato, peeling a potato, and all of a sudden you're going into your skin and it's a little... It's hard. Imagine having it methodically shaven off your body. And they preserved the skin, they embalmed it, and they put it onto a round board. And once every 70 years, they took a limp, crippled, lame Jew, and they threw him out to the Colosseum. And then a gladiator came and leapt on his back, and he had no choice. And the gladiator was holding the skin of Rabbi Ishmael. And that poor crippled Jew had to walk with the gladiator all over the Colosseum while he was holding up Rabbi Ishmael's skin. And this was the day for the Romans to remind themselves that they had conquered the Jews. You know what happened? And then it ended. Because that's what happens. We outlast them all. When did the Romans destroy the Beis HaMikdash? You know what are the dates?
70
AD. When did the Roman Empire fall? The empire that was built to last 1,000 years. Not 250. That's when it starts to come. The heyday was 400 BC AD. This was the Roman Empire that crushed the entire world. Hashem creates these historical challenges. We don't fight with second-class countries. We are in the heavyweight division. We're not persecuted by Iceland or by Costa Rica. It's Nebuchadnezzar. It's Paro. It's Achashverosh. It's Romans and Greeks and Arabs and Christendom. Because we're struggling with history. We're battling history. We're delivering messages to history and our battles with the people that search history, that dictate history. There's no discrimination coming from Argentina. We're fighting real countries, real heavyweight, and then we defeat them. Okay, I got one last story I'll let you go. I was in Russia in 1987, and this was the height of the Soviet Empire. I'm sure you read about that in high school. Communism, nuclear war, assured destruction. I still remember nuclear war drills. I mean, I'm not that young. I remember going under the table and we had drills about what happened when the Soviet Union decided to bomb America. Not if, when. It was obvious. Bill Reagan. It was obvious. 1987, we heard about some Jew who was imprisoned in Russia. So we decided in Yeshiva, and we decided in the community, we had a fast on his behalf. So the entire yeshiva, wasn't Shabbat Sarek, the Shabbat, we fasted an extra day. We davened, we said Vayichal. We'll talk about that later in the shir. And then we called him in his prison cell in Russia. We said, we fasted for you. Maybe one day we'll see you. 2 weeks later, we walked into the Rosh Hashanah. His name was and is Yuli Edelstein, who is now the speaker of the Knesset. I fasted for Yuli Edelstein. I sat next to him in yeshiva. We know each other. Buddies. Speaker of the Knesset. Yuli Edelstein. Last sentence. Write this down. We just celebrated the 70th year of the State of Israel. How long did the Soviet Union last? Soviet Union. What? Soviet Union lasted 69 years. If you went to Las Vegas in 1967 and said, what are the odds that the State of Israel would outlast the Soviet Union? You probably would have gone 300 to 1. You could have become richer than me if you placed that bet on Israel. It's all paper tigers. We see through it. We see through Rome. We see through. And that's how we see through Soviet Union. It's all just
too scary. These things don't bother us. We see through them. Okay? So cry for your inability to cry if you can't cry. And sometime we'll finish this year. Sometimes I don't have urgencies. Get tired of Arca. Keep your head straight. Okay, we'll take a little break. Let's learn some real Gemara. Okay, I'll tell you some tradition I heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik. He said the high school boys are learning Megillah, right? Or you're on the wrong, you're learning Megillah. That's what Rabbi Schwalbe told me. Is that not true?
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. I had the privilege to learn with one of the greatest Talmudic minds in the last 500 years. So, Tyson Torah that he said about us. Yes, a Torah. Girls are welcome to stay. Older boys are welcome to stay. It's all I'm for. Okay? Mm-hmm. We need some of your work for today.
He says he's quite generous.
It's good to make your older brother generous.